Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thanks very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. It's my pleasure, as always. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'm glad you're here. Jim Ostroff is with us, ladies and gentlemen. Jim's back. We always like it when Jim joins us. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Some of the things that Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world these days. Jim reports and I editorialize. That's how this works. And Joan, too, when Joan is here. So, Jim Ostroff, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jim. Good morning, and good morning, everybody.
It's good to have you back. Jim, I got some breaking news, as they say on Fox News,
right.
and CNN and MSNBC. This is just off the wire today, this morning, earlier today. General Motors said in its annual 10K report, this is their auditor's audit report, that its auditors have raised. Now, Jim, I'm reading this. This is right out of the right off the wire. I'm reading. I'm not paraphrasing at all. General Motors auditors have raised substantial doubts about its ability to continue as a going concern, citing recurring losses from operations, substantial stockholder deficit, and an inability to generate enough cash to meet its obligations.
That's right. We're talking General Motors.
General Motors. Now, Jim, let me read something to you from 3 years ago. This was something someone wrote 3 years ago as a prediction. At least one U.S. car manufacturer will file for bankruptcy this year in 2006. It will probably be General Motors. Now, that was in my predictions for 2006, Jim.
Right.
Now, the only reason Ford didn't go into bankruptcy that year was because they mortgaged factories that Henry Ford built and paid for generations ago.
And the Blue Oval as well. They mortgaged everything.
But the interesting thing is that's the only reason why Ford is in the better shape of the other three.
That's right. And, you know, I'll just say that
not because they're particularly doing anything any better than GM.
That's right.
They just were able to, they had those assets. Right. Go ahead now.
Right. And, you know, this year, I'm sure there will be a substantial rise in auditor opinions on going concerns or not going concerns. And actually, that comes up after Enron. I mean, there was a big thing after that and push. So we even get a lot more of those type decisions.
Is that part of the Sarbanes-Oxley edict?
You know, it may be that you have. I can't say.
Yeah,
it may
okay.
be, but whether or not, you know, it's legal, it's just that you have auditors looking at these and saying, we cannot say that the company can survive. That's what it is. Now, I do have to say that is not the final point. That's not the stake in the heart. Many of these are issued now every year, and the companies are there next year. They're being a bit overly cautious, but there are many warning signs for General Motors as well as Chrysler.
Well, as I said, I warned about it 3 years ago, and I was just premature. But, you know, Jim, and again, here's another thing. Bankruptcy doesn't mean dissolution, doesn't mean that they break the company up. It just means that it could mean they reorganize.
Well, and no, it
in Chapter 11.
The thing is, of course, that what we term the Detroit automakers really have been in, you know, a very bad situation for, you know, at least 5 years. And everyone knew as soon as sales slowed, it would be very, very tough because they just could not make it. Cost structure is too big. Manufacturing's too big. Sales are down. Sales are now at the worst level since, I think it was 1976.
Yeah,
I don't know if I cover auto.
9.5 million units, and GM and the other two need really need 11 to 12 million units to even break even.
That's correct. And just a week ago, we were doing $16 million and then around $17
million. Yeah.
So it is difficult for any company to survive in those circumstances, but especially if they've been weakened, as they have been. They're trying to shed expenses, this and that, but they may not be able to do it quickly enough.
Well, and so here's my question, though, Jim. With this blatant graphic language that we haven't really heard before from the companies, isn't that going to have an impact on the on Congress's interest in putting more money over there?
You know, you would think, yes, it will. And I would say, though, that, you know, initially people say, we got to do it. We can't let them fail, whatever it takes. But on the other hand, maybe second day story is that maybe perhaps some members of Congress and maybe even this administration will say, should we take them off life support?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And of course, another thing you hear is that what do stockholders, what do shareholders say? They read this today, tomorrow. Will they kill the company?
Right.
That is it.
Will the creditors start demanding that they go in to a chapter, to bankruptcy and try to break them up? And I don't know what assets they've got that they can sell off and get something out of. But I hate to say this, but I got to believe that this language is the foretelling of a bankruptcy filing very soon.
It may be the end. And another thing, suppliers, you mentioned, that suppliers too.
Yeah.
Say, and actually there were some already gone to court saying we want out of our contracts with General Motors.
Yeah.
Because we don't think we'll be paid.
Right.
We don't think we'll be paid.
Well, they're exactly right. But again, and I don't know, I'm not a bankruptcy expert, but it seems to me that a prepackaged Chapter 11 is going to be the way to have as little damage as to minimize the damage as much as possible, because there will be damage. And by the way, I own a General Motors car. I bought my first new car from General Motors in my life last year in May, and I love it. It's a great automobile. I absolutely love it. And I'm not. If they go into Chapter 11, I'm not worried about. I'm not worried about what's going to happen. I think Chapter 11, my car, my warranty will be fine. But if it goes to Chapter 7, that's another story. It's almost it's 20 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We come back. We're going to talk about some of the proposals that Congress and President Obama are cooking up for you and me. And we'll see what Kiplinger has to say about those. 20 after. Stay with us. Little Van Halen bringing us back. I like that piece right there. Great music. Let's just listen. Oh, that's right. We got a talk show going on here. We gotta get back to business, don't we? Welcome back. 23 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you check it out when you get a chance and use it to your advantage. Don't forget to check out my blog. Check out my newsletter. You can find a sample there. And the opportunity to subscribe, which we'll send you the newsletter by email every Sunday afternoon, get you ready for the week ahead. You can find out archives of past interviews that I've done with our Brain Trust members. You can find them there, too, about 1,500 of those folks, and thousands of archives, thousands of articles. You got 5 seconds, you got 15 minutes, or somewhere in between. Whatever topic under the small business sun that you're looking for, we got it right there. You can listen, you can read, and so I hope you check it out when you get a chance. And you can also follow me on Twitter, by the way. I'm on Twitter, and just go to twitter.com/Jim Blasingame and see what we got going on there. Jim Ostroff is our guest. He's our Brain Trust member, one of our outstanding Brain Trust members from the Kiplinger editors, I should say. And we're talking about the most recent Kiplinger letter. And, Jim, the lead story is, will Congress give Obama all that he wants? What do you think?
As I say, we say here, well, obviously not, but you'll get a lot of it. But I should just say, you know, we're talking about higher taxes. We're talking about limits on deductions and stuff on health care and energy. But let me just say that already we are seeing, and you know, we are seeing a pushback by members such as Mr. Bingaman, the Democratic mm-hmm. leader, and mm-hmm. others. One always has faith that perhaps, you know, it works, and you know, members of Congress on both houses eventually will say, whoa, you know. It's one thing, it's painless, it's easy for them to throw money at things and say, okay, 700, 800 billion, fine, we'll do, all right. No. But when you're talking about extremely substantial changes in our, not only tax structure, but it's society, I think more people are given time, taking time to pause.
Right.
So, you know.
Well, I've certainly taken time to pause, Jim. And
right.
And when I listened to every word of the president's address to Congress the other day, and he looked right into the camera and said, if you make over $250,000, that makes you one of the top 2% of wage earners, and you're going to pay more taxes. And I'll tell you something, Jim. I took that to heart. I believe that's what he wants. I believe he believes that. But you know what, Jim? In the small business world, in the world that I live in, $250,000, that's for a family, by the way. $250,000 of income for a family in a small business world does not make those people rich. I can tell you that. And by the way, folks, in my site, my blog post, the second one down, I posted it earlier this week. I wrote a blog post about what that $250,000 would look like broken out in a small business family. I hope you'll check it out. It's called The Truth About Taxing Those Wealthy Small Business Owners. And, yes, the sarcasm is intended. And so check that out when you get a chance. But, Jim, $250,000 does not make anybody rich, and it certainly doesn't make you rich if you're a small business owner because, you know, what a lot of people don't understand, Jim, I pointed this out in my blog,
mm-hmm.
income from a small business, most of it goes, because most small businesses are structured as subchapter S corporations or LLCs.
Right, right.
Any income that is the profits that that company makes goes directly over to the personal return of that owner.
Right.
And a lot of that income is, that a lot of those profits are not in the form of cash. They're in the inventory and receivables, but they're still taxable.
Right.
And so even though a business owner may have $250,000 in income, but that doesn't mean that's on their W-2.
Yep. Can I go to the supermarket and pay with receivables?
They won't work.
They can't take
a box of inventory to the warehouse, to the supermarket and barter that. You know, they won't do that.
No, but it's good enough for Uncle Sam.
So higher rates for capital gains too, Jim.
Well, yes, and I have to say, you know, on that, because I've been around, you know, here since the reporting since the 70s, and it's just amazing each time. I mean, I must say that cap gain rates were cut, that we had a tremendous boost
yeah.
in ultimately in tax revenues and business creation.
Like, you mean like when they recently cut it from 28 to 15%? Most recently, tax revenues went up, didn't they?
They did. They did. And I remember when this happened in the early 80s under Reagan, and again, as part of so many things, they said he's crazy, we're going to lose money. No, we made money. But it also encouraged business formation, which mm-hmm. encouraged job formation.
Mm-hmm.
And, there are those who look at this and say, well, it may, yeah, okay, in instant short term, it'll raise more money. Beyond the instant, it won't.
He wants to raise capital gains from 15% to 20%. Now, here's the thing, Jim. Even though these gains are not going to happen, these increases are not going to happen for a year or so, the point is the fact that they are announcing them, the fact that they want, they're telling the world this is what they want, it's having a dampening effect on the economy, isn't it? I want you to respond to that. We'll comment on that and talk some more about some other issues that Kiplinger reports on this week. After these messages, 29 after the hour, here's Atlanta Rhythm Section to take us out.
Still gotta try. That's right. Doing no matter what the people say.
He's the man Talkers Magazine says is one of the most important talk show hosts in America.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
He's Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. It's my pleasure as always. You're going to be glad you stayed with us. And if you just tuned in, you're going to be glad you're part of what we're doing, because we've got our good buddy Jim Ostroff back on the show, associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. We're talking about some of the proposals that President Obama is requesting and whether Congress will give them to him or not. Jim, I want to read one quote here from Winston Churchill. I contend that for a nation to try to tax itself into prosperity is like a man standing in a bucket and trying to lift himself up by the handle. Winston sure. Churchill. How about that?
That's right.
One of his successors, Margaret Thatcher, is alleged to have said, the problem with socialism is eventually it runs out of people to tax. And so those are two important quotes, I think, for President Obama to think about right now. Jim, one of the things that you guys point out is there's going to be a limit on itemized deductions. He's going to limit the amount of money you can deduct for your mortgages. He's going to limit the amount of money that you can deduct for charitable contributions,
mm-hmm.
right? Things like that.
Not charitable contributions, but it's basically.
I was thinking it was also charitable. I may be wrong about that, but I.
It would be capping deductions that you could make totally at 28
okay.
cents on the dollar, and
right.
you know, instead of 35 today, and of course that would affect charitable groups inordinately.
Right. I see what you mean. It's not targeting them, but it just so taxes are going to go up, and your ability to deduct are going to go down.
Which, Jim, is
the same thing. Lowering deductions is the same thing right. as a tax increase.
Well, yes, because at the end of the day, bottom line, you likely pay more.
It's two tax increases, basically. What I think it sounds like we're looking at. Jim, let's talk. Let's move down and talk about the energy bill that they're working on. Will there be an energy bill this year, and what will it look like?
Yeah, we think is very likely that by the end of the year there will be yet another energy bill. And here again...
Have we ever had an energy bill?
Well, we've had many, but, you know, it depends on... Sounds like
We don't really have a comprehensive national energy bill, though, do we?
No, we have no energy policy.
We've got a patchwork kind of thing going on.
Absolutely. We've gone back here, of course, since the 1970s, beginning with Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter and others, you know. And it's a patch here and a patch there, but there's no one has taken a systematic, real hard look at this. Perhaps this administration is coming closest. But let me just say, the Bush administration did begin to formulate a national energy policy, but it just hit a buzzsaw in Congress, and rather than anything in 01 by 05, mm-hmm. we had energy patchwork law.
Yeah.
So, but they're looking.
One of the
here,
things, though, he talked about that was is he plans to push through. He wants to push through what he calls cap and trade, but what I consider that, Jim, to be cap and tax. Because the cap and trade they're talking about is going to make carbon a commodity that the government will own the spigot on. The government will decide how much of that commodity you can have, and they will tax you basically on it.
Well, they will, and of course we're not talking specifically about individuals, at least for now. I mean, it's mainly aimed at businesses, you know, and transportation, et cetera. But the bottom line is that it will cost more for your fuel, for your electricity or natural gas, everything.
Right.
And they love that. And right now the thought is that, yes, it is a tax, but that will go and fund expanded health care. Mm-hmm. National health care. That's how we do it.
Yeah. Well, that's another sticking point, well, for me at least,
yes.
Is the idea of the government being the single payer or in control of health care. I mean, why would we want... And he proposes that. I mean, he talked about that last week, didn't he, Jeff?
Yes, yeah.
And the thing is, I mean, why would we want the government to create another organization like Medicare? Why would we want the government to... I mean, they've already robbed Medicare and Medicaid, the trust fund, to the tune of about $4 trillion. Folks, if you don't know this, your Congress stole that money. There was $3-4 trillion in the Medicare Social Security Trust Fund. They stole that money and spent it on you and me, I guess. But it's not there anymore, only IOUs. So is that the kind of folks we want to be running our national health care? You decide. 2012, I know what my decision is. 2012, right back with Jim Ostroff after these messages. Stay with us.
One fine day, you're gonna want me for your girl.
Oh, I was warned about her love.
We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Little Robert Cray bringing us back. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com, and Kiplinger's website is kiplinger.com, KIPLINGER.com. I hope you check it out when you get a chance. It's an outstanding one. You can find their publications there, the Kiplinger Letter, the one that Jim and Joan and I work off of every week. And that's the weekly flagship publication. They've got four biweekly letters. Jim, you got the California letter. I bet that's a fun letter these days. The tax letter, the agriculture letter, and the biofuels letter. I still want you guys to change that to alternative fuels. Be sure to run that up the flagpole over there for me, Jim. And then they got that magazine thing going on.
Yeah, Kiplinger Personal Finance Magazine.
And that's available on newsstands and by subscription. Jim, what's that phone number?
Yeah, there's a toll-free number for subscriptions, and that's 800-544-0155.
So check that out, folks. And so you got that 30-day free trial that I worked so hard to get you, folks. So subscribe to the publication that you think you'd like and tell them to sign you up. And if you don't like it, they'll give you your money back in 30 days. So I hope you'll do that. I think you'll like it. The Kiplinger Letter has been a bellwether. It's been a rock of information and netting things out now since 1923. How about that? And by the way, Kiplinger is still home-owned, family-owned, basically a family-owned small business in many ways. In fact, Jim, in the classic definition, Kiplinger is still a small business.
Oh, it is. It is. It is. Certainly within our niche in the industry.
Yep.
Certainly
absolutely
is.
Jim, let's move over and talk about business taxes. You guys say that businesses are going to get hit pretty hard on business taxes, but not until 2011. But what are some of the examples that it's going to be hit pretty hard on?
Well, for instance, the multinational companies, like particularly oil and gas firms and, and private equity and real estate partnerships and some small business owners, basically increase in taxes because they'll be lose various subsidies.
Jim, I'm a little confused.
Yeah.
Aren't these the same people who create the jobs?
Well, they are.
Perhaps you're noting my air of sarcasm here, Jim. But aren't these the same people the government really want to create new jobs? Why? And I'm asking this rhetorically, not necessarily about Jim.
Yeah.
Why, my friends, are we raising taxes on the only people who will create jobs? There's old saying, and I actually heard somebody say this one time. A guy who'd been an employee all his life, he said, "No poor man ever offered me a job."
It's true. It's true.
And so that's something to think about, folks. What else, Jim? What are some other taxes on the government, on business?
Let me just see. I mean, for instance, this budget proposes to end so-called low rates on carried interest.
What is carried interest?
It actually counts. It's basically the these are key earnings of venture capitalists and hedge fund managers, but it's basically an accounting thing where it allows you to carry over interest.
Right.
Let me just
one, one of the things. One of the things that is definitely going to hurt, and I mentioned this earlier in the hour. Small business owners are going to have their taxes increased if they have a total income above $250,000 a year, and whatever part of that income is from profits, folks, remember, that is not cash in the bank. Profits from a business are not cash. That's the profit the company made, which most of that is going to be in the form of inventory and receivables. And so, it's really like phantom income.
Well, one could argue that.
And I think maybe that may be part of the carried interest thing. It may be phantom income. What phantom income, folks, is when there's a taxable event that's been created, but yet there's no cash to pay the taxes.
And nothing you can spend if
right.
you wanted to. It's not like
exactly.
money in the bank.
Right.
But all of that, one would argue that all of that has a corrosive effect on business formation.
Even before it happens, because of the planning for it.
Right.
Jim, let's move down and talk about. I want to talk about the financial services. There's a sea change happening between banks and credit unions, isn't there? You know, for a long time, credit unions didn't have to comply with all the same regulations as banks. Is the government leveling that field a little bit?
We think they're likely to put them both more on an equal footing. Mm-hmm. Of course, for many years, as sort of their own self-interest, banks have been have worried about any looser oversight and tax benefits by, you know, co-ops. To say, no, we all
co-ops,
play in the same sandbox.
The credit unions are typically structured as co-ops. They're owned by the customers.
That is correct. They are owned by customers, and banks say no. We all play in the same sandbox. We mm-hmm. shouldn't. You know. Now we believe that investments that will be made by corporate credit unions and these are entities that serve basically banks for regular credit unions.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be more on equal footing, and that is...
Well, one of the big things, Jim, is the Community Reinvestment Act. I don't see you guys reporting on that here, but the main reason for all this, folks, and the reason you need to know about this is credit unions are becoming a bigger player. They're becoming bigger players in communities competing directly with banks, like independent community banks. And if they are, they should be regulated the same way as banks. I think if this happens, I think it's the right thing. Tintail, going to come right back. We got more to come after these messages. Stay with us. We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Jim Ostroff is our guest. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Jim, one of the things that I want to talk about, to touch on again, I mentioned it earlier, and we mentioned on the first page about some of the new things that President Obama is trying to get through when we talked about his cap and trade. But over on page 3, you talk about some new regulations, and the EPA is Carol Browner is back in charge of energy. She was a former EPA secretary under Clinton. She's back now as the energy czar under Obama. And she's starting back where she left off when she left, and that's drafting rules, as you guys report this week, drafting rules to on carbon dioxide pollution. And what she wants, I think, is to her. I think her ultimate goal, Jim, is to declare carbon dioxide as a poisonous gas.
Well, yes, and one that has to be regulated.
Think about this, folks. Think about this. Jim, I think we should put this in perspective. One half of the photosynthesis process on planet Earth is carbon dioxide.
That's right.
and she wants to turn it into a poisonous gas, a regulated poisonous gas. Right. Jim, I'm having a hard time seeing how that's going.
Well, of course, they say CO2 is big greenhouse gas that is creating global climate change, and therefore needs to be regulated. But I must say, as a quick aside, if you would buy into that, you were more concerned about methane gas,
yes,
which the lion's share of which is created on our planet by livestock.
Animals, exactly.
Animals. And
yes.
I don't know what you do about it. But the point here, of course, ultimately it's regulations looking to do cap trade and other things, creating new trading systems. And as we've discussed before, bottom line is you pay more.
Jim, I saw a report yesterday that says that the Earth has been cooling for the last 6 or 7 years.
And something I'm looking at, there have been some data coming in saying that since 1999, I believe, on average, temperatures have been cooling.
Yeah. And this is not to say that that human beings aren't contributing and that we shouldn't monitor and contribute and try to conserve and cut back on our emissions. I'm not saying, I don't fall into that camp. I don't think we should do nothing. But I think what we can't do is we can't ruin our economy in the process of doing something.
Well,
that's my editorializing on that thought, Jim.
Yeah.
I want to move over though. Retail is on its backside right now. Is it? You guys report on that at the bottom of page 3.
It absolutely is. You know, and it has expanded. It has overexpanded for really 20 years. And basically, the thought is if we every put a store or whatever on every corner, and you know we will be the last one standing. It hasn't worked. Sales are, you know, way off. Rents are down, maybe up to 10% this year, and there will be a shrinkage. I got to say, ultimately the market is working. There's a shakeout.
Several have already gone bankrupt. Some of them gave up before the holiday was over.
Well, they did, and of course you see some of the names such as Circuit City, but
right.
there are many other large ones as well. But
Jim, now let's segue over into top of page 4,
right,
with the small business report, and you guys say that we in the face of what you just said, that it may still be a good time to start a small business.
Yes, sometimes we like to be counterintuitive, and the point is that ultimately the odds may be better in your favor for small businesses. Because of many others are heading for the doors. And, you know, particular, say, everything from an auto repair shop or fast food, you know, restaurants or tutorial services, they tend to hold their own, you know, when times are really tough for other companies. And, you know, and we've looked at this, and many times, you know, franchising is a good way to go.
The problem with all that, Jim, and you're right, and that's the conventional wisdom.
But
the challenge, though, is the availability of credit.
Is credit. If you can't get credit, you don't have anything.
Yep, because most of us don't have enough money to capitalize a business all by ourselves. At least we can do it in the beginning. We bootstrap it early on, but ultimately we need help, and that's dried up right now. And one of the things Mr. Obama needs to do is he needs to turn the SBA loose to help small business owners, and I hope he'll focus on that some more. Hey, Jim, good letter this week. Good job today, and thank you for being here again.
Thank you, Jim. Always a pleasure. Take care.
Jim Ostroff, ladies and gentlemen, with the Kiplinger Editors, and they'll be back, I promise you. Joan, probably next week, and for sure, and Jim, of course, one day in the future. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you today, be guilty of committing a random act of kindness.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.